Good morning. My name is Aaron Dimerson, the Executive Director of the Governor's Office of Economic Development and Tourism. Let me first of all just thank the Texas Department of Transportation for allowing us to actually play a role in this particular conference, in this particular forum panel as well, a panel discussion that's entitled The Road to Economic Prosperity, a very fine title associated with the Texas Department of Transportation. I like the road aspect in there that talks about prosperity. And so here in Texas, we're doing a number of things. We're going to have just a nice informal conversation here. I know Alicia had asked you guys to come to the front, but that's okay. We're okay that way as well. And so those at the back, don't sneak out of the room. So we'll ask you guys questions. But as we look at the road to economic prosperity, from the governor's office standpoint, economic development and tourism, we look at what's happening here in the state of Texas, and we're seeing some phenomenal things. If you look at economic development, you look at prosperity, you'll find the governor the other day at lunch just talking about Texas and saying that there's no better place to be but Texas. Of course, he's a little bit biased or so, and so we're all biased in that sense, but we think Texas actually is the best place to do business. And so when you look at that, there's third-party validation associated with that. There was a recent poll issued by CNN that actually named Texas as having the best business climate in the nation. We actually came in number two. We were ranked number two in that poll. There was another poll that came out that ranked us number four, and we continue to be in the top five, top ten in a number of different polls that are taken throughout the U.S. and internationally as well. Of course, we're going to use that number two poll. We're not going to use the number four poll. We'll use the one that talks about us being in second place. But and even there, Tracy knows this, we don't do second very well at all. We like the number one rankings, and so we're going to continue not to rest on our laurels, but to do what we can to make it work. The governor likes to always say that in Texas, it ain't bragging if it's true. And so some of those things that we're talking about, it's not anything that we're bragging on. It's actually factual information. When you look at job creation in our state, over 600,000 jobs that have been created in the last three years. In Texas, we continue to outpace the U.S. Average. You look at the GDP in the U.S., Texas continues to surpass that. We've been doing that since 2004. If you look at job growth in our state, in our nation, Texas continues to outpace even the job growth that's happening in the U.S. And if you look at unemployment rates as well, we're better than the national average. Now, there are pros and cons of that unemployment rate because we're doing great there, but at the same time, we need to make sure that we have an available labor force so that when companies are looking at coming to our state that allows us that economic prosperity, that we're in a position to fill those particular jobs. And so we think we're doing a fantastic job as it relates to economic development, and we're on the right path. We're doing some phenomenal things at the governor's office to make sure that we're continuing to do those things, but we can't do it alone. In state government and economic development, it's always done first at the state level, but the local levels play a major role. And so we're happy today to have on this panel the Texas Department of Transportation, and I'll introduce our panelists and let them talk a little bit about what we're doing. But in Texas, anytime we're going out, we have to connect the dots. And so we need the state agencies that deal with workforce issues, the state agencies that deal with transportation issues, and we're happy to have TxDOT as a partner with our Economic Development Office and the Governor's Office to make sure that we're able to connect the dots when there's a company coming in and they talk about, well, logistics, when they talk about how do we move product, when they talk about a road that gets their products moving. TxDOT plays a very important role. And when we're out there with the rural communities and they're saying, we need this, we need that, even the urban communities, we have individuals on staff that can actually answer those questions. And so that's an important component for us. In addition, in Texas, economic development is done at the local level. And so anytime we have incentive programs at the state level, we're going to look at our partners at the local level to really make this happen. They're going in with tax abatements, and we come in and close the deal with some of our programs. But the real work and the rubber meets the road at the local level once those individuals come to that respective city. And so we have representation on this panel from the state standpoint and Tracy, who's representing it at the local level. The beauty of this is that Tracy's also worked at the state level as well, so she can cover the globe. And I teased her about that before, that we'll get her perspective on a number of issues. And so with that, let me first of all introduce our panelists, and then I'm going to turn it over to our panelists for presentations, and then we'll get into some informal Q&A as well. So first we have Ron Haggis. Did I pronounce that right?
Very nearly.
Okay, it's a good Swedish name, he told me. So it's Ron is the lead researcher in the Government and Public Affairs Research Office. He holds a bachelor's degree in chemical engineering and an MBA both from UT, Austin. His professional background includes work in the energy industry and teaching management science. He is currently working on projects relating to the regional transportation economic modeling, asset management, long-term forecasting, and scenario development, and a web-based interactive tutorial on transportation issues. That should be a real good tool, because if we have site consultants and they're in a position to go to the web to look at different things, it makes our job a lot easier when they're there at night searching the web and getting the answers to their questions. He's also working on two articles relating to this session, this past legislative session, perspectives on the value of a road in transportation and expanding economic opportunity. Based on this last session, that should be some good reading, Ron. So we're looking forward to that. Let me also introduce our second speaker that will be coming forward. And this is Tracy McDaniel, somebody that I know that's near and dear to me. I actually used to work for Tracy at the Governor's Office, Economic Development and Tourism, where she headed up that area. Tracy is currently serving as Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer at the Greater Houston Partnership. In this capacity, Tracy oversees the daily operations at the partnership, which was formed in 1989 from a merger with the Houston Chamber of Commerce, the Houston Economic Development Council, and Houston World Trade Association. The partnership is the fifth largest business partnership in the nation, representing 10 counties and 2,000 businesses in the Greater Houston area. Tracy's been recognized by Minority Business News as one of the influential African-American leaders in Texas, and other publications that have recognized her include the Houston Defender, the Black Enterprise Magazine, and Houston Woman Magazine. As I mentioned, she previously served as executive director here, spearheading economic development and tourism operations. And just a pin there on the tourism side, she really did some phenomenal things there that have moved our office in the state of Texas as it relates to tourism from a state that wasn't heavily visited to one that's world-renowned at this particular point. And so the tourism aspects of what's been done coupled with the economic development aspects have been just phenomenal for us at the state level. But during her leadership as executive director, she oversaw the creation of about 16,000 net new jobs and capital investment of over $4.3 billion. And so she's been had joined the Texas Department of Commerce back in 1991 and has spent more than 21 years at executive and senior management experience in both the tourism and business development area. She holds leadership positions in numerous professional and industry organizations and serves as the chair emeritus of the board for the Capital City African American Chamber of Commerce here in Austin, although she's in Houston, the board member of the United Negro College Fund Council in Houston regional in the Houston region, board member of the Houston Greeters, a board member of the Center for Houston's Future, United Way of Houston, and the Houston Image Group of the Greater Houston Convention and Visitors Bureau. And so as you can tell, we have a panel here of experts with a wide breadth of talent and experience, and so we're looking forward to bringing the panelists here. And we're going to talk about the road to economic prosperity. As I mentioned, we're doing some phenomenal things here in Texas, and so we want to continue those. And so both Ron and Tracy will address the aspects of what we're doing, how we've gotten here, where we're going in the future, and how we're going to make sure that we're continuing to make Texas a state that's the best place to do business. So with that, let me introduce Ron to bring a presentation. I think he has a PowerPoint presentation.
While we're working on this, let me just go ahead and start. In 312 B.C., Appius Claudius Caesar was a Roman magistrate who began the first work on the first superhighway. It was the Appian Way in Rome. And about 2,300 years went by, and then in 1983, a young economist then with the Federal Reserve named David Ashour published an article saying that transportation was very important for the economy, for a growing economy, and for moving people and goods, the same reason that Appius Claudius Caesar began work on the Appian Way in 312 B.C. The economics profession reacted with shock and dismay at such a radical idea. But he, Ashour, did a very major service by bringing this up. And at the time, there weren't a lot of tools to really do a proper job of saying how important transportation is to the economy. He made some initial work, but we're just now starting to really get models that are starting to show the results. The results are dramatic, and I'm going to be talking about them a little later in the talk. But let me just kind of start with a kind of an issue of mine. I mean, if you went to a restaurant and you had a menu like this, you know, what would you tend to order? Actually, I'm interested to pick on somebody. I think I saw Mary Owen back there. Mary, are you back there? Let me just pick on you, because I like to do that. If you went to a restaurant and you had this menu in front of you, what would you choose?
Hamburger.
Why not the other? Chef Surprise number one. Number two could be really good. Why not those?
Well, those that I work for the state.
That's not the answer we discussed. Okay. So, I mean, you know, I think you attend, there's a tendency not to want to pay money, especially a lot of money, for something when you don't know what it is you're going to be getting. And yet it's sort of a, let's hope I do this right. Yes. The noted transportation economist Oscar Wilde in the 19th century talked about this, of Seneca being a person who knows the price of everything and the value of nothing. Now, I far be it for me to ever suggest that the media would be cynical about anything, but when I read the headlines about transportation issues these days, I see things like this, what the construction needs are in dollars, huge numbers, what toll rates are and could be, what congestion pricing, what kind of numbers we're talking about there for individuals, what kind of fuel tax increase we might be needing. And this is all very important information. This is, in fact, a lot of this information we are trying to get out to get the issue across. Yet, when I read the articles, I don't really see corresponding discussions about what you're getting for this. It's mostly just big numbers about what it's going to cost individuals. So really, my whole talk is about what are the benefits. And I like the sort of hackneyed but still good analogy of an iceberg. The congestion is a major issue on economic impact, and the value of reducing this congestion, while everybody understands it intuitively to some degree, is still generally very underappreciated. And take an average traveler, maybe the most important person in the state, an average traveler on a congested road in the state, and a voter. Now, this person looks around them, and they see they're in congestion. They see the people around him are in congestion, so forth. But there's a lot of things the average person does not see and cannot see. They don't see the other cities where the same thing is happening simultaneously. They don't see the damage done to industry, particularly small business. They don't see the delayed shipments going to business and what that's going to cost business. That was talked about some in an earlier presentation on the cost of congestion. And also, they don't see the damage to, for example, a small business that is struggling against global competition. They're trying to undersell them. What damage that can cause a small business when they're losing competitive advantage because of delays in the state. Very, very important. So it's generally underappreciated what these are. And there's some definite underappreciated facts I want to bring up. One, and this is something that we at TxDOT are trying to get across, to get across to people, that the current, especially the future extent of congestion, if nothing is done. People understand what's going on right now, at least to some degree, but if you really look at the future, put the numbers to it, it's pretty shocking, and we're trying to get across that we need to do something about this. Also, an underappreciated fact is just the economic cost of congestion and the value of reducing it, given the supply chain economy that we have now. And finally, and I mentioned this earlier, the impact of congestion on small business. And this is so important. Small business has been the major engine of increased employment over the last couple of decades. So this is a very underappreciated thing that we need to try to get across. Just some large numbers, but again, these are estimates of direct delay costs in terms of cost of time and burn wasted gasoline and so forth. Numbers, there are some more recent numbers probably, but still, these are very, very large numbers, and this is the kind of thing that average person can't know. A very important thing is about the evolution of the U.S. economy and really the world economy. Two things have happened, and both of them have major impact on the need for transportation. One is we've moved to a more service-oriented economy, and there are slightly less things being shipped for that reason. Gone away from production-oriented and more towards service-oriented, even though transportation is important for service. But at the same time, over the last two decades, especially, the just-in-time production business practice has really taken hold. And these two effects actually sort of counteract each other. more service-oriented means there's actually less physical transportation going on, but the just-in-time production paradigm means that that transportation that does occur is extremely important, more important than it used to be. It's not just some sort of academic thing. If you look at this graph, you can see the inventory's percentage of the overall economy of the country is decreased by almost 50% over the last 20 years. So this is not an academic issue. This is for real. It's happening. Very, very important. So again, the importance of reliable transportation has really moved to the front. There are also some misconceptions. One of them is that economic development is really about megastores and corporations, the Walmarts and the big service centers like that. But it's a lot more than that. It's small business, again. Another misconception is that economic development is about new businesses that line the highways. A lot of those actually have moved from another location, but that's not really what it looks like. That's where the economic development is occurring. It's actually not. And there's another misconception that economic development is just about the employment you get from road construction. That's beloved of local mayors and so forth because they immediately see the impact. But it's about much, much more than that. When we make a transportation investment, there are many good things that happen. We improve pollution situation, reduce costs, we improve safety, and do these various things. We were going to have a pollution expert, but they came down with a case of asthma, having been behind an 18-wheeler around Oak Hill. They're doing okay now. We were going to have a safety expert, but she had her fender torn off around Bastrop, and she's dealing with the insurance company. And we had a congestion expert who was going to talk, but he's stuck around Round Rock right now. But I'm going to talk about the economy. So really, what about the economy? What is the impact of this? Well, basically, all of the good consequences that come from transportation investment have an impact on the economy, particularly if you look at long-term, and I'm going to be talking about that. Also, another long-term issue, but terribly, terribly important, and everybody in this session, in this meeting, has talked about this to one point, including the governor, the competitive situation of Texas with respect to other areas. That's another very long-term but terribly important consequence of transportation investment. How do you even start to look at this issue? What is the real impact long-term of transportation investment? Well, you can start with kind of a cause and benefit diagram, and I'm not going to go through this, and I know you're glad of that. But still, in all, I want to show just the complexity of the cause and effect that occurs throughout the economy, again, particularly long-term. Two very significant things are, one is business migration. Again, that has to do with businesses are going to be migrating to places that they can attract good workers, which means pleasant places, which means not unpleasant places. And similarly, streamline industry structure and management. As cost of transportation goes down or up, in any case, business makes adjustments. But the two main things I want to talk about in this chart are the green box there, the initial construction stimulus benefit. Again, this is beloved of mayors because you can see the equipment and all the work that's being done while a major construction project occurs in that locality, and a very definite immediate impact. But the blue chart box, rather, the long-term productivity impact is more beloved of economists. This is the long-term impact, the major long-term changes that occur, and the current economic models actually model all these, this cause and effect. That's basically how they work. This is just a screen chapter off one of the modern models of the REMI model, but I have another chart that kind of makes it a little bit easier to see. Basically, this is the result of project-related employment. It was actually a Texas case study we did, but what it shows is you can see the green jump up there, and that's the initial construction stimulus. It's very real, but it also goes away when the project is through. But then, now the project's completed, and now we're starting to get improved transportation, more efficiency in industry, and so forth. And over a long period of time, you get increased economic activity. Now, there are a few things that economists agree about, but one thing they do tend to agree about is increased productivity is a good thing. That is one thing that is hardly in dispute. So this is what actually happens over time with a major transportation investment. Now, you know, is this some kind of voodoo or something? It's really not. It's very mainstream and very simple and very logical. And just to go through a couple of just very simple steps that occur, when we make a major transportation investment, in this case, I'll talk about adding capacity. So we're increasing mobility, which is the thing that's really needed in the state. When we successfully do that, the delivered prices fall. delivered prices of raw materials to factories and businesses, and delivered prices to the retail areas. The cost of transportation goes down and benefits occur because it costs less to do that. Business and consumer access to commodities rise. It's easier to get to things, you have more access, and particularly business has more access to workforce, which is the next point. And this is a very real effect. Workforce has to take in consideration how easy is it to get to a place of work, and the better transportation is, the wider, the more variety workforce the industry has in getting their workforce, and it's a very real documented effect. Well, when you add all these up, the gross regional product increases, basically, over time. The economy gets better. I'm not going to get technical here, but I just want to talk about the new econometric models. David Ashour didn't have the models that are around now, and it was really his early work that stimulated this. This is, again, that cause and effect type of diagram, but, again, the models take all this cause and effect into account and produce these economic stimulus numbers. That's how they work. And exactly how that is done, well, that's why God gave us economists. Anyway, but this is how these major models work. And I want to get into a few numbers because the devil's in the details and the real impact is in the actual numbers. And I don't think if you talk to a neighbor, a friend, a member of the family, and you just happen to make the statement because you have nothing else to talk about that transportation is good for the economy, you're not going to get an argument. No one will argue with that. Now, in a place, particularly in a place like Austin, you may get an argument about whether economic stimulus is good at all, but you're more likely to get an argument about that. But no one's really going to argue the statement that transportation is good for the economy. But the question, and the really important question, is how good? The Governor's Business Council did a study last year, and they found a 25% annual rate of return on simply meeting the mobility needs over the next 25 years in the metro areas. Now, I'm sorry to sound like an MBA, 25% rate of return, that's basically just like the interest rate you're getting on your bank account. Would you like to get 25% interest on your bank account? I would. That's way above the average industrial rate of return. Also, over the last 20 years, the average real rate of return on the stock market to an investor like you or me is about 5% a year. So this is a whopping rate of return, basically saying this is a very good public investment. It's the kind of public investment we need to make. And the whole reason for this, again, this is looking into the future, 25 years in the future, is, again, not just now, but looking at the growth we are expecting. If we do not add capacity, this is essentially the kind of damage we would be doing to industry if we don't do something good about it. So there's two sides of the coin. Either if you do nothing, here's the cost that we will pay one way or another, or here's the return we'll get by making the proper investment. The economic benefits for the metro areas, they found about $18.4 billion per year over the 25 years. And these are huge numbers, but maybe employment's a better job. They also found that about 9,000 permanent jobs would be created and 113,000 construction-related jobs by simply meeting the mobility needs in the metro areas. And there are still additional needs. There are also urban areas which have needs, and there are rural areas that have needs. This is merely talking about the metro portion. So this can be scaled up to the state. So again, this is just the only table I'm going to show you, but I had to show you at least one table in my presentation. But basically, this shows kind of where the 25% rate of return comes from. But you see, you can see where it comes from. There's increased economic efficiency to business. There's economic impact of the business savings themselves. There's fuel savings to individuals and businesses. And finally, time savings to individuals and businesses as well. When you add all that up, that's where this remarkable 25% rate of return comes from. Now, there's two really major questions. What is the size of a future financing gap that is needed, and what would be the value of making the investment? Again, it's just like going to the restaurant and saying, what do I get for my money? If you're looking, the best estimate we have right now is $86 billion statewide over the 25 years when we include metro, urban, and rural. Just that's the best number we have right now. If we do not meet that, looking at the results, just scaling up the results from the Governor's Business Council analysis, the lost economic opportunity would be on the order of $284 billion in present value, today's dollars. Also that would be lost jobs would be on the order of 12,000 permanent lost jobs and 147,000 lost jobs in construction. This is opportunity we'd be leaving on the table if we do not do something about the mobility needs. To put it in more personal terms, the net effect would amount to about over $400 for every Texan for every year for 25 years. And that's not just gasoline savings, that sort of thing. It's the economic stimulus that results from the avoiding the cost of gasoline wasted and so forth, and time wasted and so forth. So this puts it more at a personal number. So, I mean, this is substantial. And again, it gets back to that 25% rate of return. That's a huge number. It's basically saying this investment is badly, badly needed. Well, there's been a lot of research over the last couple of years, and I've been putting it all together. And there's not time to go into them, but that's why I'm writing a summary paper on this. But basically, there's been a number of studies on the statewide value, the Governor's Business Council being one of them. There have been studies on individual corridors as well, what has been would be the economic impact of the TTC 35, for example. Noted economists have done some work along that line. There have been studies of regional impacts. What is the impact of major corridors on the overall region? And finally, there's been some work on what the economic impact on multimodal investment, in this case it was ports. So there's been a lot of economic studies over the last couple of years. But one thing I found really remarkable in assembling them is there's been remarkable agreement, given that there were different studies by different people done at different times. But the overall rate of return they're coming up with is virtually the same. It's remarkably close. Ranges from 25% to 30% annual rate of return. It's just really remarkable that they're all coming up with very similar results, given even different methods. So that gives me a lot of faith that this 25% type number is very real and what the economic benefits are from that. Now, I started the talk talking about how the negativity in the press is only talking about the cost of things and not about the benefits. And we're trying to do something about that in the GPA research. One is we're summarizing the existing studies, and it turns out some of the work has not even been published. We're summarizing that into one document so we can have that to really show to people, because it's really kind of a weight of evidence situation when you look at all these studies coming up with virtually the same conclusion. Different studies and everything, it's pretty impressive. You have to start saying there must be something to this if all these different studies by different people at different times using different methods come with the same result. Now, the commissioner, one of our five goals is improving economic opportunity. And when projects are being proposed, for example, pass-through financing projects are being proposed, we have indices relating each one of those goals. And there's an index that relates to the economic opportunity. We've recently done a major improvement of that economic improvement index. Again, so for every project being proposed, we'll have this information on what its economic impact is going to be looking like, too. And again, this is kind of information we really need to have to make the best investments, because we just don't have a lot of money to waste on things. Finally, we're working right now. We're in the early stages of seeing the least expensive way to do this, but our district engineers particularly have been asking us to give them better information with which they can talk to their localities about why local areas need to participate, you know, donate right away and things like that in major projects. And localities want to know the same thing everyone else wants to know: what's in it for me? Well, there's major economic impacts, positive, locally. And again, the district engineers are asking us for some studies on exactly how that works so they can give those to local people and demonstrate to them actual numbers instead of simply waving their hands around what the economic value really is at the local level. So we're working on doing some case studies of that we can provide to them as well. So we're trying to do something about getting more and better information out there about this terribly, terribly important issue of what is the economic value of doing this transportation investment and get away from hand waving. So that's basically what we're up to, and I'll conclude my talk with that, and we'll maybe have some questions later.
Thank you, Ron, for your comments. Our next speaker is going to be Tracy McDaniel. I've already done the introduction, and so with that, Tracy, we'll bring you up from the City of Hope, so Houston.
Good morning. I'm really honored to be here this morning. It's always good to come back home. I still consider Austin home, although I've been in Houston now a little over a year. It's also fun whenever I get an opportunity to share a platform with Aaron Dimerson. We have a long history, so if he gets out of hand and try to ask me something to put me on the spot, I will reveal all his darkest secrets, so you all know that. Many of you remember me, many of you don't. I have had an economic development career for over 23 years, 17 years of that being in state government. At this point, I'm the executive of VP and COO for the Greater Houston Partnership. I am very excited about the opportunities that Houston brings, not only to me personally, but the opportunities to work at a local level and look at economic development from a regional perspective. One of my directors is in the audience today, Jody Giles. I have to say hello. Good morning. And also the manager of our transportation issues in public policy, Teresa Rodriguez, who I call T-Rod, is also here with us. Wave your hand, Teresa. At this point, I'd like to tell you a little bit about the partnership. The Greater Houston Partnership is first and foremost a convener of leaders, a convener of issues, if you will. Our membership is comprised of top business and community leaders of the region and the nation. To give you a sense and scale of the magnitude, the annual sales and other receipts by firms and organizations represented on the Greater Houston Partnership's Board of Directors alone exceed $1.92 trillion. Y'all need me to say that again? $1.92 trillion. That's our board of directors. So there's potentially to be some really scary meetings, right? Those combined receipts are greater than the gross domestic products of all but six nations. It's equivalent to nearly one-fifth of the U.S. gross domestic product. The Greater Houston Partnership is indeed a partnership. I think Aaron told you a little bit of how we came to be. It was the merger of three previous organizations, the Houston Chamber of Commerce, the Houston Economic Development Council, and the Houston World Trade Associations. The functions of these three were merged to form a single voice dedicated to building economic prosperity in the Greater Houston area. The Houston region boasts unparalleled opportunities for business, entrepreneurs, individuals seeking their fortunes. The 10-county Houston region has been ranked third best for business and careers by Forbes magazine. Expansion Management magazine puts us number five for best business opportunities. Now, why would you say that's the case? Well, there are a lot of reasons. Many of them include we have a low cost of doing business. We have a skilled and diverse workforce. We have strong partnerships between business and government at all levels. We have the Houston Medical Center, the Port of Houston, the Johnson Space Center, the energy industry, and we make no mistake about it. We are the world's capital energy for energy. And now Houston region is leading the way in yet a new industry, and that's biotechnology. We work very hard because we do have a visionary leadership. We have a history of people willing to take huge amount of capital and establish reputations to pursue their dreams. After all, who do you know that would be so bold as to drain a mosquito-infested swamp, dig a 50-mile ditch, and then declare it a seaport and a city of the future? Anywhere else that would have been unthinkable. But in the Houston region, the visionary leadership continues to this day. At the Greater Houston Partnership, our leaders continue to pursue the dreams of all our possibilities. We have a spirit of entrepreneurship, a spirit embedded in Houston's DEA. This was said by Joel Kochan, an urban historian and futurist, who basically released a study called Opportunity Urbanism. I would invite you all to read this study. It's available on our website at www.houston.org. Mr. Kochan identifies the unique assets of the Houston region and those things that will propel us to world city status. While the acclaimed author notes our region's unique assets, he also points to the seemingly mundane but absolutely critical factors essential to the Houston region's success. At the top of the list is transportation infrastructure. As the author points out, continued investment in transportation infrastructure is critical to provide vital distribution systems essential to economic growth and prosperity in the area. Highways, airports, seaports, utility distribution systems, railways are all essential to moving goods, services, and people. We are a growing region and state. The increase in the population in Texas between 1990 and 2000 was second only to California, according to the U.S. Census. Texas is forecast to grow by 35% through 2025, swelling our state population to over 27 million people. Now, if you look at the Houston metro area, we're expected to grow by another 3 million people in the next 25 years, reaching a population of over 8 million by 2025. Now, without an investment in mobility, our economy will slow to a near halt. That is why the partnership is championing transportation issues that not only address the challenges of today, but they also look toward our future. We have four toll roads within the Houston region. The partnership supported legislation in the last session that affords local control of our toll roads. The partnership also supported the principle that all revenues generated from toll roads should remain in the region, allowing toll road authorities to build, operate, and maintain the toll roads in that region. The toll roads in the Houston region provide vital and necessary thoroughfares for those who travel from the suburbs to our urban center. They provide a critical route for our thriving commerce. Toll roads are a very important part of our transportation infrastructure. Our region is also looking at future projects to ease our traffic congestion and create better traffic flow. I think you heard from Ron, this is very important, but when we look at our congestion problems compared to other metropolitan areas, we are compared to be very favorable. One of the future projects we'll talk about is the US 290 Hempstead expansion, which includes a conversion of Hempstead Road to elevated toll roads and toll lanes. State Highway 35 may become a new toll road from I-45 near the University of Houston Central Campus, south through Pearland, to the Alvin Bypass, and on to Angleton. We're looking at environmental impact studies on this project to begin in September of this year. Our leadership is working hard to make sure the people of our region have access to highways, thoroughfares, and rail lines. Ours is a difficult region to serve with public transportation due to low densities and spread out development, a plus in so many areas, but the Houston Metro system offers HOV lanes for our motorcycles and those vehicles with multiple passengers, including buses. Our solutions have been implemented within the Houston area that have significantly improved traffic flow on our highways. Our Main Street Rail is the most successful light rail in the United States with more than 40,000 boardings daily. Metro Solutions Phase 2 will expand the light rail system and implement an additional 4 guided rapid transit lanes. Now let's talk a little bit about infrastructure as it relates to goods and services. The Houston port is ranked first in the United States in foreign waterborne tonnage, second in the United States in total tonnage, and 10th in the world in total tonnage. We also have a new terminal, the Bay Port Terminal, which is one of the most technology advanced port terminals in the world. The Houston Ship Channel has been a catalyst for growth in the Houston metro area since the first expedition of the steamship by Buffalo up Buffalo Bayou in 1837. More than a quarter of a million jobs in Texas are tied to the activities of the Port of Houston. Cargo and vessel activity at the port supports 785,000 direct jobs in our region as of 2006. The port has just received some new impact numbers, and we'll be releasing those shortly. In total, about 7.2 billion of direct, induced, and indirect personal wages and salaries are generated by maritime activity at the public and private terminals located in the Port of Houston. Our seaport gateways have dramatically improved our economics in our region by connecting its industrial base and that to the coastal and inland United States to the rest of the world. Getting cargo from the port to locations throughout the region, the state, and even the country has its challenges. The Houston region is unique in the most freight traffic in the region and cannot be relocated outside of the urban areas. Now, major rail relocation is not feasible at this time. Therefore, a freight rail district has been developed to address regional rail issues, and the partnership supports initiatives for improvements, including removal of at-grade crossings, which are needed to improve safety, traffic congestion, and our air quality. We have more than 1,200 at-grade crossings in the region. Many of those flow through densely populated urban areas. This last session, the partnership supported the capitalization of the Texas Rail Relocation and Improvement Fund to develop efficient rail and roadway systems that may require improvements and relocation of existing freight rail lines. Let's talk about air a little bit. I've mentioned the land, the sea. Our Houston airport system is the fourth largest airport system in the United States and the sixth largest in the world. The Houston airport system is primarily gateway to Latin America. According to a 2003 economic impact study, the airport system supports more than 150,000 regional jobs and contributes more than $24 billion to the local economy. Houston's Bush International Airport has the second largest number of nonstop destinations and the second largest number of international nonstop destinations in the United States. More than 51 million passengers go through that airport on an annual basis, and more than 360,000 metric tons of cargo travel through the Bush International Airport. Particularly strong this past May were the air cargo shipments from Asia, Africa, and Australia, which combined represent 73.3% increase from just last year at the same time. These dramatic increases surface just as the new Asian all-cargo carriers have started working with our airport system. China Airlines and Korean Air Cargo get into the swing of things at Bush International Airport, and it has made a tremendous difference in our traffic. But we're not stopping there. Our airport system is expanding as well. Bush International Airport is expanding international and domestic services with terminal expansions to meet our traffic needs. In January of 2003, the airport system opened a new cargo center at Bush International Airport that expands more than 120 acres. The cargo center features a new one-stop shop for federal inspection services, for cargo clearance, including a full-service inspection facility for quick certification of foreign animals, plants, and seeds. More than 900 freight forwarders currently are using the services in our cargo center. And our Houston Hobby Airport was selected as the number one airport in the country for customer satisfaction in the United States by the travelers. A new hobby management district was also recently created to generate and promote economic development in the area. As you can see, the Greater Houston area and the partnership are dedicated to building transportation infrastructure that will continue our status as a global hub throughout the world. Our challenge as a region is to leverage our existing advantages through a very deliberate and well-thought-out plan. And we do have such a plan. In 2005, the leadership of the partnership developed a 10-year strategic plan. The plan serves as our North Star. It provides the basis for all we do to promote our region and shape the region of the Houston, and to create a location and a destination for businesses to come. We have been very ambitious in our goal to take the Houston region to the next level. The world is a global marketplace, and Houston is a global city. To build future international relationships, we must continue to seek out new partnerships in the world's theater. To marshal the necessary resources to transform our vision to reality, the partnership has launched Opportunity Houston. Opportunity Houston is a $40 million campaign that allows us to compete and win in the competition for high-paying jobs. Over the last 12 months, we've raised over $27 million. The Opportunity Houston campaign will support our strategic plan and provide an aggressive marketing plan to reach our goals by 2015. We're focusing on the following clusters: aerospace and aviation, energy, information technology, medical, biotechnology, and nanotechnology. We're competing against other countries, regions, states, and metro areas that are offering hundreds of billion dollars in tax incentives to lure business to their areas. Our goal is to further establish the Houston region as the hub for global commerce, a place where companies of vision and people of energy, enthusiasm, and a strong work ethic can come and prosper. We have the ability to make these goals a reality with our strategic plan, a solid transportation infrastructure, and Opportunity Houston. I would like to share with you some very exciting events that we're going to be hosting in the next few months. We're calling them our super events. It allows us to position Houston and the region as a global leader and also as a thought leader. The first of these events is a successful coup of bringing Lucy. Now, how many of you know who Lucy is? Let's see your hands. All right. Thank you, Chairman. Lucy is a 3.2-million-year-old hominid fossil who is thought to be one of mankind's earliest ancestors, and she's coming to Houston. We will be having Lucy on exhibit at the end of August. We would like to invite you all to join us. It's the first time she's ever left the continent of Africa for a public exhibit. This is bigger than King Tut. This is bigger than any exhibit you can ever imagine, and we're bringing those people, those resources to our region, not only to showcase in the region, but also to showcase the state of Texas. The second event I'd like to talk to you about is we're announcing on November 13th that we will present and host a presidential summit on America's energy future. The summit will give top presidential candidates the opportunity to present their energy platforms. We are working now with a national major network to broadcast the event, and we are looking and like to invite you all to join us there as we position Houston and Texas as a global leader. I invite you all to come by plane, train, automobile, share these events with us. And at this time, I'd like to address any questions, Aaron, or give them back to you.
All right.
Well, every question I had here for Tracy, she's actually thoroughly addressed. I actually wanted her to talk about the Port of Houston. You covered that, the relationship that they have there. Also, the Greater Houston Partnership and the Opportunity Houston, what they're doing in that regard. Actually, just an example of what other cities can do. I was talking to my good friend from McKinney, Texas, and Ron, I want to address this question to you before I open it up to the audience. Really, Tracy talked about the growth. Houston will be at 8 million at a certain time in terms of their population. We also have the city of McKinney, where he was sharing with me that a few years ago, they were at 50,000 in population, one of the fastest growing cities in the state, in the U.S. 2 years later, they're at 100,000, and they're the second fastest growing small city in the U.S. as well. And so with that growth in terms of what's happening in McKinney, as an example, in Houston, and the things that they're going to do, how do we handle that from a transportation standpoint? Are we prepared here in Texas to handle the growth? The population base continues to move south, and as a state and working with the local level, are we in a position to handle that particular growth? I'd like you to address that. And we have the microphones before you guys. If you can, you can see Ron there.
Is it on here?
It's on.
Well, technically, we're in a position to handle it. I think the real issue is to get full understanding of all the local authorities and so forth to provide the funding. I mean, basically, we can do it. But I mean, the real issue is, is there going to be enough understanding of the importance of providing for that in advance? And I think that's a really important thing. You know, you've got headlights on a car so that you can look down the road, and if a deer is running across there, you can put on the brakes before you hit it. And at TxDOT, we're trying to be the headlights for people. We're trying to look out into the future and point out into the future, because if we simply wait until conditions become intolerable before we do something, it's going to take 10 years or more to even do something. So there's a lot of lead time we have to put into. You just don't build a road or any major facility overnight. And so we really can't wait until conditions get insufferable, until the public rises up in outrage and says, do something, because in an instant or two, we cannot do something. We have to, therefore, educate the public, make them aware, help them look out in the future, give them information, and the public officials as well, so they can take a look at that future and just like what you were talking about, and basically marshal the funds necessary.
Okay. Good. Thank you. Tracy, in terms of the Houston region and the population growth and the things that are happening there, what are some of the things that you're hearing as it relates to any transportation issues? Are you hearing anything out there, any concerns or complaints? It seems like you guys are addressing those issues, but
yeah.
Anything that come to mind?
I think I address most of them in the presentation, but what I can say, you know, when you're looking at economic development in a local area, and this is one of the reasons why it was easy for me to make the decision to leave the state, you are looking at economic development at such an elevated level. You really don't know how it all happens until you truly get amongst the trees, and that's the local level. That's when you can see how the public and the private partnership, businesses, work together to improve an area. One of the things that Houston is doing very well is they are forecasting for the future. If you look at our population base today, and if you look at it, you can dissect it in many ways. You can look at the growth. You can look at the ethnic makeup. If you look at those things, we're where the United States will be in 2060. So then you can look at Houston as almost becoming a test model for where the future is going. That's when you have to deal with all the infrastructure challenges, the workforce challenges. You have to look at it very holistically. And that's what our leadership is doing.
I commend you on the North Star 2010 strategic plan. I like that.
You
so,
got it.
Let's open it up for questions from the floor. And we have microphones there. And we'll we'll address it. You don't have to be shy or anything.
Does TxDOT have software, or have there been enough case studies that in a used to be rural area that has rapidly urbanized like Hidalgo County has, what the impact of a loop system in air quality, transportation time improvements, and even ad valorem taxes. Is that software and that analysis ability readily available, or do y'all have sources that might could help us tap into that?
Well, there's private consulting firms that do that sort of thing. The models go down as far as the county level, but the problem is the further down you go in as a microscope, the less accurate those models become. And the same is true for the air quality models as well. That the wider area you're looking at, the more confidence you have on of it being correct, and the more finite you become in terms of looking down into detailed levels, the less accurate it becomes. But I don't know if this answers your question or not, but there are models that will go down to a county level. But I think, I think they're still useful because they do give you, an idea of the kind of impact and the various things will occur, for example, loops and so forth, that sort of thing. It will give you an idea, and I think that's usually enough because, you're usually, when you're looking at economic impact and things like that, you're not designing something. You're not building a space shuttle where the tolerances have to be close. You're really trying to look, is this a good idea or is that a good idea? What policies should we do to ameliorate things or whatever? And even fairly primitive models can give you a pretty good idea of what the right thing to do is.
Any other questions? If not, let me address this. We talked about an international aspect, and in the governor's office, we Texas is the number one exporter. Tracy talked about Houston in terms of where they are ranked number one, number two, and then number 10 in the world. That's phenomenal. The amount of attention that's coming to Texas, we were recently in Europe and France, and out of all the states being represented, the city of Houston was actually in France at a World Investment Conference where they were looking at what they're doing in that particular city as an example for the world. And so from an international stage, if you two would like to talk about what we're doing from the international standpoint, we visited China where you talk about products coming from China and then they're going into the Long Beach area, but now we're talking about bypassing Long Beach, maybe utilizing Mexico, bringing it to the U.S., and there are a lot of ports in Texas that stand to benefit. So anything along the lines of our international aspirations and logistics, Ron or Tracy?
Well, of course, it is becoming I think Jimmy has a better way to handle on it specifically, but the economy is becoming more international. There's no question about that, mm-hmm. And there's no turning back on that either. So the more we can do along that line, just the better we are. It's that simple, really.
That's right. One of the things that we're doing on a local level, and this is all about the campaign that we've launched with Opportunity Houston. We've been able to expand our marketing efforts and promotions in target international markets. Houston as a region represents over 87 consulates. That's a lot. We are fully and look at ourselves as an international destination. Currently on Monday, the CEO of the partnership is leaving to join the mayor on a trip to Russia and the Netherlands. This is very important to our market. If you look at our airport hubs, if you look at our transportation infrastructure, if we're about attracting people to our region to bring in jobs, to relocate and look at targeting talented professionals to help support our workforce, we're going to have to open our doors to the international marketplace. There are several things that we do when you look at tactical how we promote ourselves. We have not only trade shows that we represent ourselves, we host over 200 inbound delegations on an annual basis. We also have outbound trips where we promote the region. We work very closely with our consulates to make sure that they understand the research of the region, and also we support them in their research efforts to look at trade and investment. So I think if you're looking at truly economic prosperity, it has to be an integrated approach. Your domestic marketing and recruitment is part of that, but the other part is international.
Okay. Thank you. Pat?
I almost didn't want to ask this question. Pat Townsend from Mission and member of the Texas Border Coalition. I also serve on the I-69 Alliance. Ms. McDaniel, I want to go to your comment about the tollways and how important that is to the vitality of the Houston area. And how many counties did you say are affected? Was it 10?
10 metropolitan.
10. How far, you know, if we have an interstate system that was built under a different environment for transportation. So how far out is across Texas is the interstate system that comes in and flows through and out of that 10-county area? How far out were those improvements to the growth and prosperity of Houston? And how far out do you see the sharing of that toll capability into perhaps non-toll viable areas that still feed the growth and prosperity of the 10 counties and out to 2060 of Houston?
Right.
What's the vision there of that, since we're in a, you know, the federal government or the road ferry isn't going to come build something, so what are you thinking there at the Greater Houston Partnership?
I think this is something that our leadership, we have to look at. We have to look at when we're taught, have any dialogue about forecasting the future. That's, to me, where the public-private partnerships comes in. We have several of our board of directors. We have an infrastructure built where we have a task force that only focuses on our transportation issues and the public policy issues that affect it, not only on a local, state, and federal level. So we are trying to look at ways where the future, our reach has expanded, the impact of that. As far as the reach of the development of the infrastructure in the region, I think it goes back to something that Ron said that really clicked for me. You have the actual construction and development, but then when you look at the productivity and the impact that it has not only on the small business, but the business flow in that region and beyond, I think that's what we're looking at. We're trying to really create an economic region that can compete and compare with economic regions all over the world. And forecasting out, if I'm getting what you're saying, is part of what we're talking about and what we're looking at. Toll roads become a big part of that. Our rail system, the light rail becomes a big part of that. Public transportation is huge. I've been there, a little over 12 months, and I can't tell you how many local initiatives we hear about on how to deal with our congestion in the area, keep people out of the central business district at different times with flex hours and others. So we're always looking at opportunities and modeling feasibility studies, doing benchmarks with other centers that are doing well, not only in the United States, but also internationally. And my chairman is kind of moving around. If you want to add to that, you can.
Yeah, the best thing about Houston, Harris County, in terms of looking at the region, is that toll road, Harris County toll road, and Gary Street, and the regional textile department work hand in glove together. And if you notice that the toll road, Harris County toll road, which is established, has joined hands with the Fort Bend toll road to assist them in that toll road development. And Gary Streets and TxDOT really work well in terms of planning and looking at the future. It's an outstanding, great collaborative relationship. And I think it's really well along our way to reaching out, not only to Bradbury and other counties, but throughout the region to make a difference.
Well, the only thing, and I appreciate your comment, both of you, But what I'd like to encourage from somebody that's from South Texas, that, you know, we've been told by TxDOT and other officials, and we admit it, that perhaps sections of this new environment are not toll viable, and we're quite a ways out in the future. What we need right now is the continued leadership and vision of people from the Houston area, elected officials, business leaders, and your organization, because it's not just reaching out to the next 10 counties around your 10 counties.
You got it.
You guys are leading this state, and we need you to keep doing that. So I encourage your continued participation and vision beyond the 10 counties in the immediate area.
Yeah.
Because you're very important to getting that done in this state, because we're not getting it out of Washington.
Got it.
And, you know, the parts of I-10 that never would have made sense when Eisenhower built it, well, we got the same predicament in I-69 and some others.
That's right.
So we got to have you taking part in this, and, you know, you take care of your area, which I understand. We have that mentality at times, too. But then we need you beyond that
reach.
Beyond
that.
Sure
we're
do.
We're doing that.
Yeah.
We're doing that. We have been very instrumental and working for and the support of I-69.
Yes, sir.
We have staffed I-69 for the consultant and dollars and cents. We are working with, through microfilms and others, on this urban transportation area. So not only have we done work with I-69, but we have coordinated and worked with other major metropolitan areas throughout the state of Texas through this group. I don't know what they call themselves, but it's a large metropolitan area. So when you combine the two, I think the partnership is taking the appropriate leadership role throughout the state to support this great effort on transportation.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, and I'd like to add to that, because I know we have to go. One of the other things that we're doing, for the first time this year, the partnership actually had a paid full-time lobby team. And that is a tremendous effort. We not only looked at it on a state, local, and federal level, but with the campaign of Opportunity Houston, we're able to increase our efforts there. Not only that, we're able to hire specialized consultants, and I think that's what the chairman was mentioning, to focus on those issues that are important to the region and to the state of Texas.
Thank you. Well, our time is fastly approaching. Any other questions from the audience? We can take one more, and if not, I'm going to ask the panelists to provide closing comments so that we can keep you on time for an 11:30 lunch, and so we're about 3 minutes away. So, but Ron, I'll let you have any closing comments that you'd like to make.
Well, I think we really need to keep hammering on the importance to the economy of the mobility needs. Again, I think it's just generally underappreciated. It's something we can't really expect the public to know. They're busy leading their lives and everything. It's our job to really analyze these things and put it in good terms and get that information out. That's what our job needs to be, because the public in the end makes the decisions, and then it needs to be an informed decision. If they choose to not invest further in transportation, as long as it's an informed choice, that is their choice. But our job is to make sure and try to assure that they are informed.
Thank you. Tracy?
Yeah, if you're looking at economic development and where we're headed with our transportation infrastructure, when you look at it from a regional or a local area, it is very important to have your public-private partnerships. I can't tell you how critical that is to economic prosperity in not only your region, but I also agree it is beyond, because whatever we do to help our region locally, it flows beyond that into other counties, and not only, it helps the attributes of the state of Texas.
Okay.
And that's what we're all about.
All right. Well, let's give our panelists a round of applause. In summary, I think it's been said, you know, city, county, state, a federal level, those public-private partnerships are very important. And Chairman Giles summarized it, a hand-in-glove approach that's being taken place. I think if we continue to work together, we'll see that the road to economic prosperity is bright and alive in Texas, and we should be going forward. So, again, thank you guys for coming out to this session. And our panelists, we really appreciate your support. So thank you.
Yeah.